Yo, what's going on, Relay? It is time for another Monday group chat. I am here, Kofuzi, with Matt Chittum, Peter Bromka, and Marcus Brown. And we're going to be talking to you guys about, I'm not really sure what today is, that kind of day. It's, start of the new year. It's my kid's first day back. So, I'm still kind of easing into things. I had an easy start to the year. And, I'm ready for whatever you guys got planned for today.
I think it's going to be a lot of Houston stuff because some pros are running Houston. Some non-elite runners are running Houston as well. So some on this podcast. So I can't wait to talk about Houston. With that said, Mike, you started diving into a little YouTube rabbit hole that I have a lot of thoughts on. We had to really just start pressing record. We didn't want to leave it on the cutting room floor. So I can't wait for you to bring this up because I think this has been an experience a lot of people have had.
Yeah, we could get into that, but let's say hi to everyone else first. Peter, Marcus, how was your holiday? I haven't seen you guys since last year, so how are you guys doing?
Mike doesn't want to get into which ads he's been clicking on Instagram and YouTube. You know what? Also, you did the intro, but you're beating around the bush of how much. Yeah, it is race week for Mike Coe, and we are excited. I know that Matt already said that, but I'm very excited. You can't just bring us along. Reel by reel, pace by pace, workout by workout, and not expect us to be all in. So I'm just saying this is a creation of your own making. This is your own creation.
Well, thanks, but did you have a good holiday? Come on, pleasantries. Let's go.
I had an interesting holiday. I've been telling people it's like this. All of my in-laws flew in, cousins, aunts, uncles, parents-in-law, and then I got COVID. And had to stay in the back bedroom for 3 days. So it's sort of weird to be in the home, hearing all the festivities and just be crushing Netflix and napping all day. No one needs to feel sorry for me, but it was very strange.
It sounded like you just rushed through Christmas just to get to Mike in this answer. It's like, yeah, give me the damn turkey. Give me the damn pie. Yeah, whatever. I know, yeah. Go for your presents. Yeah. Go away, kids.
Marcus, did you have a good Boxing Day? I know that's a different holiday than when we celebrate over here. So how was your Boxing Day?
It's kind of changed now because I think everything's now open. I'm sure you probably can all relate to this. When you were a kid, things closed over Christmas, but now everything is open. So life just carries on. So it doesn't really have the same meaning as it probably used to, but that was good. I got to spend time with my kids and they had a really good time and I had a good time. So no, it was fun. Actually, everything bar, actually, I had a leak in my kitchen on Christmas Day and I had to get the builder to come out and sort that out. But yeah, bar that, everything was smooth.
Marcus, I have something I am obsessed with about London.
Mm-hmm.
I am coaching a man who lives in London and in just the most British way ever, he said, would it be all right with you if I started off the new year on the first racing a 10K? And I'm like, you guys host an all-out 10K New Year's Day morning? And he's like, uh-huh. Which is just to me the perfect British, this is where you stand. You should start the year knowing exactly where you stand so that you can base all of your training, paces off of where you stand on the beginning of the year. I'm like, yeah, sure, I would love that as a coach to know exactly how you're doing. So we did, and it went pretty well, as you'd expect, good enough, and you're like, thanks, great. We should all be so forthright and so honest with ourselves.
Well, as the representative for Great Britain, entire nation, I feel like I could speak for this man and everyone else. I don't know. I mean, I was coming back off an injury, so I just try to avoid everyone else's running to it. So I just tried to avoid it. But no, good luck to him. How did he get on?
It went well, sort of as expected, yeah. Then there's it's exactly what you would hope for. All of the excuses are built in, all of the holiday break and the eating and the, out of routine. But then there you go. You show up and it's a great reminder. I mean, I think it plays into that park run tradition that you all started that's now global of you could try to obsess your 3 mile or 5K PR, or you could just rip a 3 mile quite often and see where it leads you, which is, I think, a good philosophy.
Yeah, you've got a couple of people that do New Year's or New Year's Eve or New Year's Day runs, and I think that's pretty cool to keep that tradition up. I was going to actually ask Mike really quickly how his Christmas went, but I've got to admit something. I was on a Google call, and before we, do you remember a while back we had a call when we all had Mike's backdrop with the shoes? And I could see their eyes just like popping, going, "What the hell is happening to your background?" I was like, "Oh no, it's my background. It's Mike." And they're like, "Some explaining." Do you know when you start explaining, you sound like an idiot. So I was just like, "Oh God, just, oh, just, I've now just backed myself into a corner now." But no. How was your Christmas, anyways?
It was good. You know, someone in our family got sick as well, so our Christmas plans had to change a little bit. So we were here instead of going back to Iowa for the holiday. But for New Year's, I usually go see my sister. So we were in Connecticut for a few days, and then my kids, like I said, they didn't go back to school till today, so they had a little bit extra time after the New Year. So we took them to New York, which, you know, I go frequently. My wife's been there many times, but we realized like our kids hadn't ever been there with us before. Like, maybe our older daughter when she was like a baby, but she didn't remember at all. So like we did the full touristy thing for, you know, a good day and a half there. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
All right. New rule for Relay members. If you visit New England, you have to at least let me know. It's a very small place. Oh. I live 13 miles from Connecticut. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, she's in Southport, though. So, like, she's on the other side of the state from me.
Like, it's 90 minutes away from Southport. It's 90
no,
minutes.
No, no,
he'll be there.
That is a New England commuter's lie, and you know that.
That's
everything in
I
New England
live...
takes forever to get to.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we did fly into Hartford, and I was like, I should probably let Matt know. But I'm like, I don't want to make him come out all the way out to there. And then,
oh, my God, that was funny.
Because we were driving to my sister's house, and then we're going ahead and heading west.
I do this the most with John Ranieri, who lives in Flagstaff, who's a professional runner, who also works on McCurdy Train, just like I do. And he visits his family in Connecticut quite often. And every time I see it on Strava, and he's already gone by the time I connect with him, I'm like, what's going on, man? I'll ride a bike next to you. I'm not going to run with you. Don't worry. You're too fast for me. But Peter, I have to say something, going back to what you said to Marcus, because I think we might have to revoke your passport. Because, first of all, how dare you say impeach America's honesty with the names of our New Year's Day runs? Like, we literally call them the Hangover Classics. Like, we couldn't be any more honest about the situation. Oh. So for you to impugn U.S. integrity over the naming rights over our races, I guess, first of all, is how dare you?
I guess we're honest. Yeah. We just don't expect as much of ourselves. Like, we're still celebrating the revolution from all of that imperial expectation. It's just like, oh, so rough. Yeah, no, I mean, I commend the Americans who get out there, that's for sure.
I'll say this. I think running after Christmas, the day after Christmas, I think is harder than running the day after New Year's, at least at this stage in my life. Because, I may stay up late, but it's usually with the family. It's usually not going that hard at all on New Year's Eve. But Christmas is like 24 hours of going hard. Like, you wake up early because your kids are like literally screaming to go. There's usually some alcohol involved in the day. Tons of overeating of all sorts. Right,
just whether go,
it's
go.
The entrees, the appetizers, or the desserts, the next day you just feel awful, like for every reason possible. It's like there's a local run around here, which is like it's like basically diehards only. Like you just walk in, there's a clipboard, you bring like a canned item, and you're in. Like there's like no timing mats, and it's like the only race in the state. And like if you sign up for that race, fitness doesn't matter. If you do that, like you are diehard. And I love that about it. But I think the day after Christmas at this point in my life is definitely easier. I'm sorry, definitely harder than January 1st.
Well, yeah. Are you a make it to midnight type of person or no?
Just because of my kids, because they it's like the allure of it is still like novel for them. But like I couldn't care less.
Well, this is gonna blow your mind because you're always kind of blown away by time zones. But on the West Coast, with the children, we often will celebrate. Like this year, we celebrated the ball drop by dialing up the Times Square East Coast ball drop, and then it's 9 p.m. You've already done a ball drop. Most of the kids are like, "All right, sounds good."
Okay.
Yeah.
We kind of did a version of that. I think next year we might actually make it an adult day and like really dive in. We were like, "All right, we're gonna celebrate like Tokyo New Year, we're gonna like have like a shot of sake." We're like, we should do this for like every country. Have like a like country themed beverage at every New Year. Right? So every hour have like a country themed beverage. And you know, once you get into like Europe, it makes it easier because you have a bunch of different choices. you know, like, all right, we're going to do this country or this country. Like, they're celebrating at the same time. But we did that, like, at, like, 5 o'clock Eastern time. And then, like, it immediately petered out until, like, wait, we have to get pizza for the kids.
Hey, we don't use that expression. just so you know, like, in my household, we don't say petered out. We are allowed to say petered up. Like, I didn't think I could do it, but I petered up and I finished strong. Don't just back into, like, using my name disparagingly. Okay. Go on.
That's it. No, I love the fact that you've lived up to your namesake, though, in some of your running exploits.
Oh, boy. there was a restaurant here that was on the local news that was trying to attract, I think, an older crowd. And so they said, what we're going to do is we're going to celebrate New Year's, but in Italy, because they're like 6 or 7 hours ahead of us here. So you'll have an early dinner. You celebrate New Year's, nice Italian food, and then you go home. So I'm like, that's for old people. But I'm also like, I'm also very interested. Tell me about it. Is there going to be gnocchis?
I'm not old.
I'm old curious.
See, Olive Garden should just do this nationwide.
That's a good idea, actually.
That's true.
Marketing, courtesy of the Relay Podcast.
Yeah.
Mike, I'm courtesy of me. You've teased this long enough about, like, your YouTube rabbit hole, which I think is fascinating, because we've gone through this rabbit hole as a family, and it's never ending. There is no bottom to this rabbit hole.
All right. Well, so we were just chatting before we started hitting the record button, which we normally do, kind of a warm-up lap, you know? And then I'm starting to tell this story, and then Matt's like, hold on, I'm hitting record, because he wanted to talk about it. Because I think Matt's really got something to say. But I was just commenting that our vacuum broke, and my wife's like, let's get another one. And we've bought Dysons before. I really like them. But we bought them back when we had less than 1,000 square feet in our home for the longest time. Now we moved to a house, so now we have more than that. And I'm like, well, maybe I should look at some other stuff. Maybe I should look at robot vacuums. I haven't purchased a vacuum in a long time. There may be advances in technology I'm interested in. So I just search for things the way I always search for things. I hit the YouTube search bar and I'm like, best vacuum cleaner 2023. I watch one video. And now this morning I open up YouTube and every video is about vacuum cleaners. There's a whole microcosm of YouTube in the vacuum cleaner space. There's clickbaity vacuum videos. There's don't buy this until you watch this video type of videos. Like everything you've seen in the phone, like tech YouTube space, everything you've seen in the running YouTube space, you know, people holding up the vacuum with a surprised face for the thumbnail, like those kinds of things. Everything exists in the vacuum YouTube space.
You have to be quite jacked to make that thumbnail.
I am in it, like my entire feed. And I can't help it. Some of the thumbnails are very clickable. And I'm clicking on them. I'm like, tell me about it. What's wrong with this 2-in-1 mopping, vacuuming robot? I need to know. So that's where I'm at right now. And I'll probably make a decision hopefully today or tomorrow.
So if people haven't done this search before, we did it about a year and a half ago. Whatever you think about the running, you know, YouTube running culture, whether it's, you know, people, you know, sharing their runs, the ultra community, trail, shoe reviewers, whatever, it pales in comparison to vacuum YouTube, which is absolutely enormous. And it feels like it's never ending. Mike went through all the levels. It's huge. I was shocked the first time I went into it. I just thought it was going to be like, okay, whatever. There might be like a couple on here. I mean, I didn't even do the YouTube search. I did Google, but because Google owns YouTube, certain things popped up. And I was gobsmacked by just the amount of things. You definitely leave it being more confused than when you entered it, because there are so many, like, don't buy this, buy that. Or even like the Ben Parks thumbnail of like, here's like, you know, the Dyson, but an unbiased review, like in the title. Like, you're like, have I been watching the biased shoe reviews? I mean, vacuum reviews, I didn't even realize. But it was astonishing. And I, to the point where like when Mike brought it up, I immediately had like this flashback and I couldn't wait to talk about it, because people listen to this, don't pause the podcast, listen all the way through. But later, today, tomorrow, check it out, because it's astonishing. It's almost like travel YouTube. That's how big it is.
Maybe in incognito mode. Maybe like go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, what's up? You've mentioned about the Ben Parks thing. I didn't realize Ben Parks did a vacuum stuff. He's a running guy. He's a good guy.
No. That was my bad. No, okay, cool. I was saying like there's some vacuum YouTubers who will do like kind of like what Ben Parks does with his titles. So he'll be like,
oh, okay.
Okay. The dice, like, so he does like the Nova Blast 4 unbiased review. Yep. With obviously, like the subtext being like maybe the other ones aren't unbiased, right? So like, you okay. get like again, yeah, you that version of titles will pop up a lot where you're like, oh no, okay. did I watch the biased version? I feel like such a sucker.
I'm just gonna go to Target and probably buy whatever is there. I'm spending too much time on it, and I'm like, it's a vacuum. I've spent a lot of money on vacuums before, and they last a decent amount of time. So I'm just like, I don't want to overthink it. There's too much.
My shit. Question, I'm just thinking, if someone was new to running and said, hey, Mike, I bet all running shoes are fine. You'd be like, look at my wall. Like, there's a lot of nuance here. You're just skipping over. I wonder if there's someone in the vacuuming space that's like, no, Mike, you can't just go to Target. I'm passionate about this space. And you're just like yada yadaing over my important, like my life's work.
No, I mean, that's certainly very plausible. I don't doubt that there are differences between Shark versus iRobot versus Roomba. I think those are all three brands, right? But the counterpoint is, for a lot of people, I tell them, like, I'm new to running, like, what should I get? I'm like, you got shoes right now? That's great. That's a great place to start. And then once you start building a routine and want something else, then you can start looking. So, I mean, vacuums are different because you don't buy vacuums, like, you know, a couple times a year or even once a year. So I understand that it's a little bit different there, but I try to like not impose my like nerdiness about the running shoes on other people. And I would like to think that vacuum people are probably not like that too, but that's not what I saw in the YouTube videos that I was watching. I feel like there's strong encampments on each side, you know, vacuum YouTube fans that are out there, no disrespect intended, you know, so don't come at me.
Mike, can you tell us the difference between going all in on a half marathon versus going all in on a marathon? You've in your life so many times, and you've documented all of it, especially when you're going for your sub 3. There was a whole genre of your YouTube life was connected to that goal. But now, goal of a half marathon, how is it like different in your training versus what are some of the commonalities? I'd love to hear about this because so many people, you know, go hard after the marathon and the, you know, kind of we all follow a lot of the same stuff, but I'd love to hear about just your own half marathon journey and what you've learned from it, because I think it is unique. It is certainly separate from the marathon in so many ways and a distance that I personally delight in just because you get that endurance piece, but you can also have a quick turnaround. You can run a whole bunch of these as A races, which obviously you can't do from a marathon perspective.
Yeah, so there's a lot of it that's kind of the same. And there is some stuff that's different. Like for me, the mileage isn't that different. I'm just not doing a mega long run. I'm focusing more on kind of like shorter speed strength. So spending even more time above at threshold, even more time closer to VO2 max type efforts. So like the sessions tweak a little bit. But there's also, you know, differentness to that too, because I'm not used to training for a half marathon. I think I've only trained specifically for a half marathon like once in my life, and that was several years ago. Otherwise, it's just kind of like I'm training for a marathon and I'll do this half marathon on the way is how I've done it. So I've never really kind of set out to run a fast half marathon before. So there's kind of like the excitement of that because I'm like, I don't know. And I'm running at paces where I'm like, you know, I'm doing it during my long run workouts and I'm like, I don't know if I can, I've done this for 5K and I'm tired doing race pace. So I don't know if I can do it for the whole time. I mean, that's a daunting and kind of sometimes overwhelming feeling, but it's also exciting too, you know? And so that's not that I don't feel that when I'm marathon training, but just feeling it a different way because it's a different pace, different body signals that I'm receiving, different kind of like panic red flags that are going off that I need to figure out how to turn the volume down on. So there's some exciting new things that are there that I'm really enjoying that are different. And because I'm not doing the very long runs, maybe, I mean, I know I probably should still do some very long runs. I haven't though, just on accident. My body feels a lot better. And so, you know, like a lot of life gets in the way. Training for Houston, you gotta, like training for CIM is great because you taper during Thanksgiving. Training for Houston is different because your peak week is like in between Christmas and New Year, you know? And so like, it makes it really different in a lot of ways too. But for me personally, like the goal that I'm setting out for Houston is something that kind of people think I should be able to hit based on my marathon PR. So there isn't the same level of like personal or even external pressures for me to run fast. If I hit it, great. If I don't, well, I have other potential. You know, it's not like I'm not going to be like, what does this mean for me now? Because like on paper, I should be able to hit this.
Let's push it right over to vacuums if you don't get it.
Yeah, I know. And this is the pivot from running to vacuums because I give up, you know. But yeah, so there's just less pressure in a lot of ways too, which I find that I run really well when I put less pressure on myself. I think a lot of people do. And so like, I'm excited to see kind of like where that all leads.
So are we. I mean, I think that's the best way to go into a half marathon is not, as someone who's gone into many half marathons and run them like 10 miles and then like all the alarm bells have gone off because you're like, it's just easy to talk yourself into some goal where you're like, I mean, that would be a really high pressure, really high reward. And then sure enough, you get an hour in, and you go, wait a second. These last minutes. So I think the inverse is going to be a perfect way to set yourself up. Also, I think Houston's an interesting place to do it because so many athletes starting together, heading out at different paces. And then, you know, was it forking off at 7 miles? I remember that being like a really interesting dynamic, different than a lot of other races where you're surrounded by only, you know, marathoners or half marathoners.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it because a lot of the people that I tend to run with are faster than I am. I'm the slow one. And so, like, I'm going to line up in the corral with them. They'll be running marathons, and I'll just peel off, you know? So, like, I don't know that I'll have, like, a pace group the entire time, but there'll be a lot of people kind of running either, like, the 126-ish half marathon to the 250-ish marathon kind of range, I think, in Houston this year. And so I feel like that'll be nice to just I mean, a lot of people talk about like the turn your mind off, kind of go to sleep kind of thing. But for me, like running in a pack is great because if I'm running and I'm hurting, but then I look over and someone else just seems to be breathing normally, that's very reassuring for my brain. And it's like, that's where for me, pacing is really important. Like whether someone's on a bike or someone's like a much stronger runner than me and they're not even breathing hard yet. And I'm like, should I be freaking out? If I look over and then someone's calm and collected, that's like a good, my brain is just like, oh, I should be calm and collected too. We're fine. So nice. Like, that's why I'm really excited to be able to run in Houston because there, it draws a lot of fast runners.
I will say in Houston on the starting line in the final 5 minutes is when it really dawned on me that, I was an older runner now. so we all the pack, you know, the half marathoners, the marathoners, we all start to press together and we get closer and closer. And then I'm like, I had this existential freak out because my friends had done something similar in Boston and the man in front of them went down and then other people went down and one friend had to drop out halfway through. He was bleeding from his arm. So I just like took it upon myself to just like calm and composed yell to everyone like, no pushing when the gun goes off. Let's all start. Let's none of us want to fall. Yeah. And I'm like, it's so nerdy and so lame, but like, I did not come all the way here to fall over in the first 5 steps.
No, that's a good call. Well, I mean, you know, I ran Houston once back in 2020, so it'll be 4 years. But if I remember correctly, it's slightly uphill at the start too. So I'm just hoping like people will be kind of chill in the beginning and no one falls, no one shoves. I'm further back than you in the corrals, Peter. So there's not a ton of shoving in my section because I don't know. It's just a little bit more chill. So I start to see that sometimes, but I'm hoping that at the, you know, the 250 marathon group there, hopefully there won't be too much of that.
Yeah. Tommy Ribs just put out a video about his New York run. And it's like 4 or 5 minutes. And in it, he talks about like the positive vibes of starting where he does, you know, now towards the middle to the back of the race versus he's like the front was like a little intense, but you know, this is like, get a chance to say hello to people, which I thought was a nice comparison.
I think my PR is like a 126.40, so 126 high, something like that. That was from like 2019. So I'd like to improve on that. If I could have a run with a 125 in it, I think that'd be great. I think it's going to come a lot down to the weather, as racing always does. in terms of the temperatures. The humidity, I remember bothering me quite a bit the last time I ran there, just because
it was windy that day too.
I'm coming from like cold winter dry, and then, you know, the temperature kind of threw me off with the humidity. And so, like, you know, hopefully none of those things will be as important for a half marathon compared to a full marathon. And hopefully just being aware of those things will be important. But, you know, Houston does have a tendency to have good weather, but also have wind. Last year's race, I didn't run, but I watched the race. And just that last like mile or so, when you get back into like downtown Houston, it was a wind tunnel and it was a headwind. So that was really brutal. So I'm hoping for, you know, that we won't see anything like that. But, you know, the weather's going to be what it's going to be. And I'm hoping if I can find a good group of people to run with, I think that 125, you know, high could make sense. But, you know, if I'm coming in under 127, I think I'll be still really happy on the day overall.
This is where I wish Laura was on the call, because I feel like this is where she's just in her subtle way, like, would just be like, come on, Mike. I did that wrong because she has a much higher voice. But it's just there, like, she says it in a way you're like, oh, there's a depth of drive there, you know, like, and then I'll try to beat people. And you're like,
yeah,
oh.
There's definitely, I've been thinking about kind of stuff like that in the last like week since I, you know, started tapering. And there's a part of me that is like, I've never been very good at hurting, you know, like keeping my foot on the gas when it hurts, just because I've been burned by overdoing it. You know, and so then something that's uncomfortable, there's also now like, oh, there's history. When you've been this uncomfortable before, things went really bad, so you should probably back off. You know, and so I have a hard time kind of like living at the half marathon intensity for a very long time. And so part of me is like, is this what getting older as a runner really feels like? Because I'm like, well, after this, I'm going to get ready for a marathon training block. And then after that, what? I'm like, how long do I want to be in race fitness? You know, that's a lot of, it's not just the time, it's like it's taxing on the body. And I'm like, do I have it in me still to keep pushing? You know, so like I think for me that's what aging as a runner kind of feels like, is like there's a lot of great ways to justify, well, maybe I should back off a little bit, you know, whether it's in the workout, the long run, the racing, preparing for racing, choosing races. So that's something else that I'm kind of like, that's where my taper brain is right now, I guess.
This is where I wish Tommy, and I'm just going to keep calling on our absent, I wish Tommy could just rotate and show his, like, what is it, unreasonable that he just tattooed down the side of his neck. You know, like, I think that's what, I believe that's what he was getting at. They'll sort of like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons to be like, well, let's be a little bit prudent here. Although, okay, now that I'm thinking about your race strategy, because I like this idea of, you know how anytime someone runs a PR, they always think they could have gone faster. You're like, oh, I mean, I could have gone faster. And so the nature of Houston is like the 7 miles together with other people, the marathoners, and then the peel off. So if you like felt like, okay, almost urgency, like, oh man, I only have 6 miles left. I got to pick it up. I got to like get going. And then you cross 10 miles. And I always think in the final 5K of a half marathon, there's that like, oh, I gotta go. I could set you up really nicely to be like, oh wow, look at that clock. I wasn't even focused on it. So
yeah, I'm hoping for that. Like, because I've always found that any race where I'm borderline panicked that I started too slow, those end up going really well. I think there's just something about endurance, and I'm trying to be like find a way to explain it better. But there's like something magic about endurance that you can kind of sneak up on it at the end of a race if you're executing well, where like there's this idea that like, well, if I want to run a 3-hour marathon, I got to hit 251s every single time. I think that like people get nervous when you're like, no, like start out 655. So 7 minute miles are fine in the beginning, assuming like pancake flat, right? So you could do that. And then they're like, oh, but that means at the end of the race, I got to hit 640s. Like if you've crept up on your fitness and your limits correctly, yeah, you can. It won't feel like you're running 640s, but you can. And so like, that's what happened to me in Tokyo. Like we started at my first mile was like a 720 just because there's congestion. And no one wanted to push, you know? So, I was like, and I'm not going to dart around people. There's too many. I'm not going to do that. And so like, we started out super slow, like a 22-23 minute, first 5K. And then you just kind of squeeze down gently the whole rest of the race. And then next thing you know, in your last 5K, you're running some of your fastest miles. And so I'm like, I think there's something about sneaking up on your limit that you can push past it a little bit. But then other times I get scared about that strategy too, because then I'm like, wait, I'm going to have 10K left at the peel off and be like, let's go harder. That seems, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. So like, you know, those are all the fears and the things that I'm kind of like, you know, doing that last bit of not physical prep, but more mental prep at this point.
Well, now, if it makes you feel better, I ran with two guys who were running the trials in Orlando this weekend, and they were essentially saying the same. Like, it's a 216, 217 guy. And they're like, how are we going to get ourselves to run easy enough while still running pretty quickly? That first, I think it's like a 4-lap race, like first two, even three laps to have, you know, anywhere to dig into, particularly when they know they'll feel like they're just getting dropped. They're just like getting left off the back, because there's no one in the race like that's that much behind them. So, but they knew, they were essentially saying the same thing. How do we set ourselves up for that urgency at the end? Because it's a great feeling to be like, I'm still engaged and I'm not just like dreading every step. Matt, that was your segue.
I had to unmute. Can you give me a break? Can you give me a break? All right. So besides our favorite non-elite runner who's running the Houston half, there's a lot of elite runners. I seem to say elite. I'm seem to say a lot is in quotes here. But there are some significant elite runners on the U.S. side running the Houston half. Some of these, any of the top five names that I saw on the list, again, you never know, injuries, you know, can happen to anybody. Some people who are running this race are running it because they've been injured. So you never know, but Nell Rojas, Sarah Hall, Maggie Montoya, Galen Rupp, Parker Stinson are, you know, five people who are definitely name brands in the running community who are going to be running the Houston half. And I just want to get what you guys thought in terms of, you know, what we could or maybe should, or, you know, kind of what you're expecting to see from them this weekend. And maybe part of it is you can put them into different groups, right? I think, you know, Nell Rojas is coming off of an injury. So I think we'll see what happens with that. She probably wants to test herself to some degree. She hasn't raced in a very long time because of her foot issue. And then, you know, at the same time, she loves to race. Like, you know, she ran Cherry Blossom before Boston, right? That was 2 weeks out. She ran Cherry Blossom hard before Boston.
Oh yeah.
Right. So she like was kicking in the final 200 meters. We're doing a podcast where they're like, she was in it to win it. Like there was no like, hey, I'm just want to run marathon pace and get my racing legs under me. Like she was racing, and we're going to be 3 weeks out from the trials. So I expect if she's healthy, she's going to do the same thing. Sarah Hall is known to really love racing as well. On the other side, like no one would describe Galen Rupp that way in terms of like having a packed race calendar. Right. Usually he's much more kind of like Emily Sisson, like very strategic, plan it out, a lot of time between races, right? And then race incredibly well. But I was really excited to see this, especially from, you know, for me personally, seeing what Galen Rupp was going to do, because I was so surprised when he announced that he was running this. So part of me wants to see him, you know, go all out. But I also wonder, maybe Peter, you have some insight on this, just, you know, just your own background. Like, what do you think we can expect from Galen going into this race from an effort perspective, 3 weeks out from the trials?
I'm definitely excited to see. I guess when I think about all these athletes who are racing a half marathon 3 weeks out, it just fits into one of the flow charts into the trials. Like you can imagine in general, are there the mindset of a certain athlete saying, yeah, I want to hammer half and see what's, you know, I want to shock the system. I want to get excited for this marathon in 3 weeks. And they probably have a, you know, precedent and a good plan for recovery. I will say, I think we've joked about this on before. The moment it's over, if it didn't go well, it means nothing. They will like adamantly look into the camera and be like, you know, that was nothing and yada, yada, which is totally fine. It's their prerogative. And who knows, like the half marathon to marathon, like you could recover and 3 weeks later have your body go, okay, fine, I'm ready to work really hard. I think that, yeah, some of these people need to race. I think it's fascinating. I don't know what it is about the marathon. I'm finding the Instagram reels, particularly that the women are putting up, to just, they just feel loaded. Like Kira put up one the other day of her like the, someone's on a bicycle and is just panning with her. She's like, 1 month to go. And it just feels like shit talk. It just feels like, look at me roll. Like, you women better watch out. And I'm
the Connor Mance Strava post from this weekend.
Oh, I missed it. What was that?
Oh, the 61 minute half marathon in the middle of a long run.
Okay, good. Yeah, I missed that. But totally, it's like a way of saying like you better watch out. And I don't know about you guys. As a fan who's going to be in Orlando, like I actually get nervous because I'm like, oh, I'm like, where am I going to watch? Like, where's the break going to happen? It's going to be like one of those games, like a sports event where is it better to be in person and be rushing around, like. You know, at a baseball game, you're like, where's my seat versus just like the broadcast where you're going to be up in their faces. So we're going to have to strategize because I'm sure there will be breaks that occur that we just miss. I was definitely running around Atlanta and people were holding out like phones with the race streaming on their phone, which then I would worry my phone would die halfway through. But it's a long way of saying I have no idea what to expect, but I'm excited that there are certain pros whose mindset is, let's race, let's go big, and let's get ready to go big. Because there's always that fear of like, if you do this big mountain of marathon prep, do you come in like a little bit, you know, like cobwebs? Like, okay, I've recovered from the efforts, but like, am I ready to be very intense about it? And oh man, I just can't wait to find out. You know, are these trials races going to go fast? Are they going to go slow? You know, so much talk about the weather, what's it actually going to end up being? So yeah, I'm excited that racers are going to race. I think Galen has been on the upswing for a while now. He has won the last two marathon trials. So he is in my view, he's the person to beat until someone beats him at a trials. So yeah, it'll be exciting. Maybe this weekend is a preview or the moment. We can only like take the nuggets out. Anything that's not like a gold nugget, you go, oh, that's meaningless. They'll be ready to go.
All right. So for the American guys, who do you think is going to challenge Galen if he's going to be around the top? Who's the closest?
I need to look closer. Matt, who we got? I mean, that's the hard part is like, it's not necessarily the competitive field that it would be typically.
See, I would say that my number one going into like our draft situation. So if I pull the first pick of the relay, you know, Olympic trials marathon draft, and I have to choose a guy, at least the guy draft that we do, my first pick would have been Connor Mance.
So thanks for telling us ahead of time.
There you go. Now we know. Well, if I get the first pick, I don't have to hide it. I don't have the first pick. Because I guess I feel the same way. You know what? It's hard, right? Because I kind of feel, and this might be unfair because of what happened, but like I kind of feel the same way about Connor as I did Emily Sisson 4 years ago, in terms of like I think she was the best person in the like going into the race, and obviously it didn't work out for her. She had a very tough day, but in terms of like how I like transport myself a month before the race starts, I kind of feel the same way. I'm like, it's tight. I can see the opposing views, but I feel like this person is at the peak, like it's like peak performance. They're running really well. They've had some really good races and they're just ready to fly. Like, I just see like, this is a race for them. This is a distance for them. And I see this being like the first step in a long journey of like marathon dominance. I guess how you'd feel like Galen Rupp, you know, 12 years ago. Kind of vibe, right? I think that's kind of like how I view the Connor Mance situation. I feel like he's absolutely ready for it. But I think Peter's point is also a very good one, that like, you know, Galen Rupp is kind of like in the LeBron James part where it's like, you don't bet against him to lose until he loses kind of feeling.
I will say, maybe this is just a preamble before our draft in a few weeks. I think we need to find some research on the names of the athletes that are less heralded. Like, I'm thinking of the Betsy Sainas of the world, where I'm like,
people are not paying attention to her, and I think she's gonna really do really well.
Yeah, you're like, I mean, I'm just flat out, there's a lot of people who are like, oh wait, who is she? And you're like, oh, she's a new naturalized citizen and she's a crusher and I have no idea what she's been up to. But if she had been an American citizen for many years, people would be like, oh, watch out. So it's a little bit of the, I don't want to overgeneralize and just say like all new citizens get under-heralded, but maybe it's true. The people who are like, you know, I know NAZ was, they still have the chip on their shoulder for how little, you know, respect Alephine got before the last trials. And then, obviously, during the broadcast. So you're just like...
Well, and before the last trials, it was tough because she was in Kenya the whole summer leading in, and then she got hurt.
Oh.
Remember, she had that, like, really quick buildup. Like, I remember hearing people from Flagstaff being like, you should see what she's doing. Like, they're trying not to tell anybody because, like, she is coming off an injury, but, like... The workout, like how quickly she's progressing is like shocking because she's like went from like kind of easing back into like she's smashing these workouts incredibly fast. Like I remember like a month out, people were like, is she going to compete in the top 10? Is she ready? Oh. Or is she going to like focus more on the 10K to be being like, oh my God, like she's the one to beat. Like it happened like so fast. Almost like words started leaking out about like the workouts.
So things click together. Yeah. I like when almost universally when Matt says remember, I don't remember and I didn't even know originally. So like remember the rumor mill that was coming out of the Flagstaff social community 4 years ago, and I'm like no
same. Marcus, your original question, were you asking like who's gonna compete with Galen at the trials or in Houston this weekend?
Trials, I think you guys are talking about, wasn't it?
Okay just wanted to make sure. Yeah. I mean, I think like on the men's side, I think that you've got guys like, I always forget his name, but he ran really well at Worlds at Beatlescomb. Is that who he runs for Brooks? Like you've got guys like that he ran a phenomenal race and I just don't know anything about him. You know, like I don't know if he's on Strava. I'll admit I haven't looked to see if he's on Strava, but there's just like, even, you know, naturalized citizen or no, there's just a lot of, and I think it's more common on the men's side. There's just a lot of runners who are in contention that we know very little about or who have shared very little. And so it'll be, I think it's going to be an interesting day full of a lot of surprises. And then you've still got, you know, a lot of potential repeat stories, kind of like saying, Matt's like, remember, but I mean, like, remember Jake Riley too. I mean, like everyone was like, who's this guy? And they forgot that there's this really great runner that's out there who's been hammering away. And like, I saw like an Instagram post of his like a week or two ago. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about him. You can't forget about the guy that made the last team. You know what I mean?
So it's like, I go differently. I use the Jake Riley as like a placeholder for like, not so much because I think it's a lot to expect that he had one of the best races of his life in Atlanta. And that was amazing. And so almost as out of respect, I try not to be like, well, he's got to prove it again. I like to be like, oh, who's the next person who we just really aren't thinking about, but could. That's to me the magic. That's to me like the Cinderella story element is like, I love nothing more than a person who, you know, they're like, oh, he had a nugget of talent, but he just put in the perfect training block over 2 years. And you're like, oh, cool.
Here's a question.
Frank Laura.
Is Jake Riley a potential next Jake Riley?
that's the question.
You know, I haven't heard a word from him in so long. You know, not that he has an obligation to tell me anything, but I'm just I haven't seen.
Let me ask you a question. Pop quiz. Pop quiz.
Okay.
The first two people on the World Athletics.
Let me ask you a question. It's like WWE.
Do you remember? No, I was kidding. pop quiz on the World Athletics ranking for U.S. marathon. So this is an algorithm. Right, not an algorithm, but it's not like, hey, what's the best PB in the last 18 months? Right, there's a point system here, but the first two are the two people we mentioned. It's Connor Mance and it's Galen Rowe. Right, we'll do like what's it called? What's the game? Where they have like the top 10 answers.
Family Feud.
Family Feud. Do Family Feud style. Right, you each get a vote. Can you name someone else in the top 10? In the top 10.
Well, I feel like, I mean, this is the controversial, this is like, I think Scott Fobel gets a lot of points for his marathon major finishes.
You got it. So that sounded like a guess. It almost sounded like not a guess.
Well, it sounded like I'm looking for the most backhanded way to compliment the way that he finishes. I find the way that he runs marathons to be wholly underwhelming and I will not be picking him for my team.
Wow.
That's my hot
take. Peter, do you know what you need?
I don't need to be a hot Instagram page. You can have him on your
team. Our context.
Someone get a fire extinguisher. Someone get a fire extinguisher. That was a hot take right there.
That was spicy. So that's spicy. I got heartburn from that.
All right. Well, he's number five. Wow. I don't even know how to pivot off that.
Okay. Who else is in there? Nico Montañez?
No. What? Nico, you get the X. You get the Family Feud X. Oh, Nico was 16.
Boy. Oh, really?
Or is 16.
We got to get some audio, you know, like, because like, that's what makes me like, and you're like, oh, it just makes your.
I'll find that. Post-production. Post-production Matt will find that.
Yeah.
All right. Marcus, so, you got a vote?
I feel like Peter needs like an out of context quotes Instagram page. Like the same quotables he's put in here, I'm going to put in the wrong context with the same things. Like, he's a placeholder. Like, is he?
All right. So
Peter guessed CJ.
Oh, CJ, not in it.
Oh,
whoa.
Number 12.
So hard.
This is when that's why when I saw the list, I was like, holy cow, like they're not going to guess this at all. This is insane.
My next guess is Beatles Comb. He's got to be in there with a world championships finish.
You would think so, but you'd be wrong.
Oh, yeah. That's three. We're three strikes out.
Yeah.
Wait, unless I'm spelling the name wrong. Hold on.
No,
it's not in there. Do you want to make any more guesses or do we need to go to what the survey says?
Clayton Young in there.
He's number three. You got it, Mike.
Finally, I got one.
That makes sense, but I'm.
He had a good Chicago finish.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And that's, I guess, gets you enough. This is where.
Clayton Young and Galen Rupp have essentially the same amount of points.
Because Clayton ran great in one race. Okay. All right.
Number four.
Peter is so mean.
I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. What has he done?
Elkanah Cabet.
Oh, yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
He's not 10 down.
Number 13.
Oh. What? This is where, in theory, like a point system.
11 through 20 is easier to guess than 1 through 10.
Probably because of well, we've been hearing.
Can we hear it? I'm just on the edge of my seat.
Here we go. We've
embarrassed
number one,
ourselves enough.
Number one, Connor Mance. Number two, Galen Rupp. Number three, Mike called it, Clayton Young, who's essentially the same amount of points as Galen. Number four, Zach Panning.
Yeah.
Number five, podcast favorite. Scott Fauble. Number six, Matt McDonald.
Yeah.
Number seven, Tshomi Mekonnen.
I don't know what that
is. I think I've been pronouncing it incorrectly.
Okay.
But, okay.
Number eight, Footsome. That's number eight.
Okay.
Number nine, I'm gonna mispronounce this and I feel bad. Simbasa. So a BBA, Simbasa.
Mm-hmm.
And number 10, Brian Schrader.
I don't know who that is.
Exactly. You know, Brian Schrader is an exciting runner 6 years ago. Like, he was the man. No, I mean, I'm trying to
context it. You're coming out sharp knives today.
He won a U.S. title, like, 6 years ago and while he was in college. And so then he, like, forewent some of his eligibility because he was like, let me accept that prize money and move on to the pro scene. And it just turns out the pro scene is hard and is arduous. And then talk about Atlanta. He was leading Atlanta at some point in the middle. You know, got these cool shades, like living the dream. Got totally eaten up by just the best runners in the country later in the race, but like has had some really exciting moments. But if you said which races. This is the problem with a point system. I like it.
Also, let me interrupt there before you say that. It sounds like they do count the half marathon results in here. So it's marathon and half marathon composite.
Okay. That makes sense.
But I don't know how many people are racing hard in the half marathon. We've talked about this before. It's kind of like, you know, those race results really don't hit very much.
But that's the thing around, in theory, I like the idea of competition and points. In application, you go like, when did he run? How does that work out? So,
well, let me give you 11 through 20 because this list is not more recognizable, but I think more. What was that, Mike?
Before you do that, I gotta apologize because I've been saying Morgan Beetlescombe's name this whole time.
Like, wait a, yeah.
And I've been meaning to say, I've been confusing him with Zach Panning for some reason. I think just their names are very strange.
Yeah, I was like, no, I hear you. And I was like, Beetlescombe is fast, but I don't.
Because I thought, he's... I was like, now I'm thinking about, I'm like, he just won like a 10K. Didn't he just get engaged or something like that? Yeah. So like, I'm like, then when you said Zach Panning, I'm like, oh, that's who I've been meaning. That's who I've been referring to.
Gotcha.
So my apologies to both of those gentlemen. They're both very fast runners and they have been, both of them have been relatively active on social media. So kudos to them. Sorry.
Yeah. That's a good correction. Good point. Yeah. All right. 11 through 20 is Sam Chalenga, CJ Albertson, Kenna Cabet, Joel Rico. Is that how you pronounce it? R-E-I-C-H-O-W. Joel Rico, Leonard Carrier, Nico Montañez, Jacob Thompson, Parker Simpson, Andrew Colley, and Kevin Salvano. There's not a big gap between 5 or 4 and 20. In fact, there might not be a gap at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that will be exciting. I mean, and then there will be the guys. I mean, I'm just going to talk about Atlanta. We'll do this some other time. Like, there's just some guys who head out and they go like, "I'm going to lead this race." And you're like, is that going to work out? But it's exciting for me as a fan. So, you know, there are guys who maybe won't even finish in the top 20 who are capable of leading somewhere early on.
Right.
What about Emma Bates? Obviously not taking part. That's real shame.
Yes.
So I have to jump in here because I've been overthinking this. I feel like it speaks the way we speak about Emma dropping out of the trials speaks to the nature of track and field and running being almost an amateur sport. Like, it's not if this was a true pro sport with millions of dollars on the line and the parties involved, you know, like a team owner, maybe analogize it to tennis. I'm not trying to be Stephen A. Smith here, but like, I feel like there's more blame that needs to be put around, and I don't want to put the blame around. And I had someone from outside the country be like, is everyone blaming Joe Bosshard? Like, straight up saying that like it's his fault? And I was like, I think not, because we're a running community that wants to support each other and no one really wants to like Monday morning quarterback, but like it is Monday morning and it's a damn shame that one of our best runners went out and ran the Chicago Marathon on a hurt foot. And so like watching, I'm such a big fan of Emma and wanted to see her succeed. And so it was kind of heartbreaking to have her tell the story of how it unfolded and learn that she went into that race, like not fully confident in her foot and then finished the race. And that to me is like, I wish a member of her team had walked up to her on the streets of Chicago and said like, "Hey, like friend, it's done." Because I think from an
Peter, I would say this in Japan, you said this 12 hours after the race. On our group chat. You said that, and I'm not saying this is like, I jumped in, not to say you shouldn't say it again, but just so people are aware, like this isn't like Monday morning quarterback. Like you said it like in that moment, like I think your quote was, I wanted to start a GoFundMe in the middle of the race so that we could raise the money for Emma so that she wouldn't feel the need to finish the race.
Like she ran 2:26 or 7, like with a torn foot. And I think that I was discussing it with someone who's a coach and he said something I think is so true. In pro sports, you set up the dynamics where the athlete's job is to want to go. The athlete's job is to be like, where's the wall? I'm ready to run through it. And so then they can outsource the decision-making to say, hey, but you make me, you help me stay just this side of the line and you help me avoid, I trust you because I'm going to have to go to places and I'm going to have to be ready to go to places that my team is saying, thumbs up, go to a dark place, make some bad decisions because we've laid the path for success. And so to see it unfold this way, I'm like, oh, that just feels like something me and my buddies would do. Kind of like go into a race dinged up and then finish and then not, you know, and then there's consequences. And so it's just a shame. I think she has raced so well and she's not only like run fast times, but we've heard, you know, now it's like, going to keep pushing the ball forward of like, we've heard she thought she was in sub 220 shape there for a while. And those are the types of runners we want to see like taking shots at the podium. So can you tell I've been,
I don't know, I don't know the full context of the foot thing, but can you just elaborate a little bit more on that? Are you saying that she knew or someone knew that it could have been a lot worse going into the race, or they think, oh, it's just one of those things? Because a lot of people go to race lines with little niggles or things that they're carrying. So,
yeah, I think it's interesting because there's so many ways to get injured as a runner or as a marathoner. And where you just go, oh, it's not on, and that's heartbreaking. Whereas in this case, I don't know if it deserves more of this like blame game or pointing to moments, but my understanding is she went in with a tight foot and then tore her plantar during the Chicago Marathon. So it's like, it's the fact that we think we can identify when it happened that makes it different than, I'm sure, any number of athletes, you know, make a bad call on a random long run. And we'll probably see that in Orlando, like, oh, so-and-so was dinged up. They didn't talk about it. Turned out it happened sometime in the buildup. But the fact that we were all watching on international TV as it happened was like, oh, this is rough. Mm. This is why I can't be an ESPN hot taker, because I'm like, I've empathized too much for the parties involved.
Peter, you have dropped the hottest takes in the history of the Relay Podcast in the last 20 minutes. I think this was not the time you said, like, I don't do hot takes.
That said, if Joe Bossard wants to coach me, like, hit me up. Like, I have a lot of respect. I just can't believe these things went sideways.
This is not just a U.S. thing by any means, even though we're talking about the U.S. trials, but like just from the Olympics race in general, like how important is the Olympics in the running community from a marathoner's perspective? Because it's obviously not, it's not figure skating where it's like, it's this and kind of the world championships and nothing else. Right. There are certain sports where like the Olympics are the game. That's it. Right. Marathoning is not that case. And you could even argue that the marathon isn't as good as the World Marathon Majors because certain countries are capped with the amount of athletes they can submit. So, you know, you could easily say that the, you know, that the Olympic marathon isn't going to be as good of a race as the Chicago Marathon. I think that's a perfectly reasonable take to have. And I think you could probably have plenty of evidence to support that take. I'm not positing that take right now. It's just an example. So I would love to hear where people view the Olympics in terms of, you know, its standing within the marathon community in terms of either elevating a runner, which I think it certainly does, but does lack of Olympic success, does it really hold a runner back? Because I don't think it does, but I think definitely think it can elevate. It definitely elevated Meb, even though he was already, in one of the, upper echelons. But I don't look back and someone be like, hey, well, they didn't really succeed in the Olympic marathon, so I have to downgrade them to some degree.
I think this is the way the world is now. Even if you move me something afterwards, like the marketing side is so important around it, what they're doing on socials, all that kind of brand stuff as well. So I don't think like people will think any less of them or any better or anything like that. I just think it's just the whole package. And I always think you made a really good point, actually. I feel like actually the majors probably are in a better way, better to watch than the Olympic marathon, but just the conditions, you don't always get, it's just one of those things really. So I don't think it really negatively impacts people, but I just think for the record and the CV, it's good to have it there to be an Olympian and have that sort of thing. But I honestly sort of feel like, I know I repeat myself, but I feel like got my word twisted there. I just think watching the marathon majors is actually better for watching competitive races, especially some of the faster courses.
We're seeing it play out this year, and it'll be interesting to see. We won't know until Paris like what the best way to lead into the Olympic marathon was. I was not the first person, saw all sorts of chirping about why is Kelvin Kiptum going to Rotterdam, other than the fact that his representation is connected to the representation of that race. People who have run that race say that it's not fast enough to be as fast as he would want it to be or needs it to be now that he's insanely fast. Because there are people who think he could break 2 hours on a flat course. So they're like, well, why is he going there? But it's going to be exciting to watch. And then the question, I think, gets into what you're saying, Matt, like if Kelvin Kiptum was all in on Paris being the defining race of this year for him, is that the choice he would make? Or would he make slightly other choices given that he's balancing things? So it'll be interesting to see. I think I have to assume that running Tokyo for Elliott is like the perfect way to set himself up. like timing wise, and he's thought it through, because I think maybe it's like an Olympic win is worth something. Three Olympic wins is totally bonkers. If he could pull that off, it would be very memorable.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what Emma does in the spring, because she's going to have a choice, right? If she's back to workouts, which she said she is in that Instagram video, then running Boston again, you could imagine, would certainly be on the table, potentially, right? Especially if she's been able to cross train effectively over the last 6 to 8 weeks, which she obviously last year she ran incredibly well. And at least on the American side, the field is going to be lessened in Boston for sure. And then you also wonder if, like, no, maybe she's going to think more about the 10K, and you know, she wants to get to the Olympics. You know, being Olympics is really important to her. She was going to want to focus on the track and maybe doing the 10K version. So I think she has some interesting choices ahead. You know, her Olympic dream is not over for this year. It's just her Olympic marathon dream is over. But who knows? There is a potential silver lining, right? There is a universe where she finishes fourth in the Olympic trials in a stacked field, and then comes off of that, especially and isn't able to qualify in the track because of lingering issues or fatigue or whatever. All of a sudden she's not there. Whereas in this situation, maybe she does make the Olympic team, and from a silver lining perspective, or, you know, the alternate universe model, like, it wouldn't have happened if she, all things had kind of aligned for her in February, and but ultimately the race doesn't go the way she wants. So, again, I'm incredibly sad for Emma Bates. I'm not wishing this upon her. I'm just trying to think, like, is there a situation in which we can extract a silver lining from this announcement? And I think there is. So hopefully that does come to pass.
Mm. Thank you for the tepid water to offset the hot heat. Let it be known, the relay, we balance each other out.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think a related point to that is, like, you know, like, the Olympics being this year definitely affects the quality of races all throughout the year, you know, because, like, a lot of people do, and this is where I feel like the Summer Olympic Marathon almost guaranteed not going to have ideal racing conditions, right? And so it's like a different kind of racer's race. But because it has the prestige of the Olympics, it draws everyone's attention. Maybe not 100% of the people, but it's something that a lot of people would love to have, in terms of having a strong showing at the Olympics, you know, regardless of the fact that it's going to be too hot and probably too hilly to run a very fast time, but it's a championship style race. But because of that, I also feel like it has gravity and it sucks people away from other things. For example, mm-hmm. Houston this year, why I'm running it, I enjoy filming that race, but I'm running it this year because I felt like a lot of the more interesting races and race stories aren't going to happen because the trials are coming up, you know? So it'll be interesting to see what happens to London, what happens to Boston this year, as people are not really sure how much they want to focus in on those kinds of races before, like, the Olympics happens. So that's,
there's a nuance to that I think is interesting. Becoming an Olympian is so important in people's identity, in how they're remembered, that I've actually been listening as all these stories have come out, like with Dez talking about, you know, Tokyo. I'm always listening for, is there any resentment if the fourth place person doesn't get called up? And it seems as though, you know, so last cycle, Alaphine has a child, comes out of giving birth and gets back to training and gets dinged up. And I think in an interesting way, it doesn't seem like there's a full understanding of, like, if you qualified for the Olympics, you get to go, you get to start that race. It's your ticket to use, however it goes down, as opposed to, like, as a fan, I'm like, I'm happy for the people who qualify, but I'm most interested in us sending the best team. I think for a while I was a little more shocked there wasn't a little bit more, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, a little earlier check-in. And even hearing about, Molly Seidel talked about how late in the game she, for the world championships in Eugene, she basically, like, did the processing with the USATF, and they were like, you have a lot going on, I don't think you're ready for this race. And she was like, you're right. And that didn't give Kira a ton of time, but, like, it's all on the athlete who qualified to make that call. And typically athletes, like, you know, want to believe and keep giving themselves a chance. So, but there doesn't seem to be much ill will or, like, harbored bad feelings about that. It's like, no, that's how it has to be. Sorry, that's a long ramble of just like, it proves how big of a deal it is for the athlete.
I was also going to like challenge that. I know athletes probably listen to me and go, like, you're talking absolute rubbish, Marcus, but like, could you look in another way and just think like, all right, maybe if I don't go for the trials, maybe if I train for like in Boston or something like that, and I come out and win that, would that be worth more for my career than maybe going to Olympics, running a really hot, hilly race?
Yeah, I think hating it,
coming 10th, 20th, or whatever.
It sounds as though Matt and I know these stories about people who are slightly the next tier. They're like B or C tier Americans who are like, oh, I don't even really know what I have to prove to myself at the trials, but man, if I could be top three Americans or top American at Boston. So you get a certain class of athlete who's quite good, but not that notable, probably not in the top 20 on that list that Matt was reading. And they go, what if I swooped in? But I think the appeal of being part of these races, if you're in that top 20, 25, is just so intense.
Yeah. The prestige.
We saw a little bit of that even in just this last New York, where I feel like some of the American field was a little bit thinned out because it is kind of close to when the trials were. And so I felt like it was a really great opportunity for some of those kind of bubble athletes to really show what they're made of. And that's great because, you know, 2024, at least it was the end of the year. I don't know how many contracts are getting renegotiated going into the Olympic year, but it's always kind of good to have a solid showing, at least on paper, saying like top 10 American going into, you know, at least the year before contract negotiation. So I feel like it's a good opportunity for people.
I'll tell you a good opportunity is if CJ Albertson gets top three and he's like, see, all of your, I need to pace myself, plan out my schedule perfectly, nonsense. I still got top three.
Oh, man.
That's what I'm rooting for. Again, I don't like personally, I don't have like a dog in this race. But at the same time, like I would love that just for like the, okay, see, there isn't as much as we have best practices and people should do what's best for them. Best for you as N of one can mean something wildly different than best for other people. And I think that hopefully that comes to pass. Cause I would like seeing, you know, maybe less dogma on some of like the race selection choices. I mean, shoot, we saw Sarah Hall do this 3 years ago. She ran incredibly well all spring. I mean, sorry. Yeah, it was all fall, right? During that year. And it was like, everyone's like, this is amazing. One of one. It's like, but is it like, maybe people can be doing this more. We also saw Kara do this, right? She had like a 9-month run where she was just crushing everything. And it was like one after another, after another, after another. So again, maybe you have to, you know, pay the piper at some point, but at the same time, like Sarah Hall's been doing this for a long time. Kara D'Amato's been running for a long time. CJ Albertson's been running for a long time. Like this isn't like an ultra runner who goes hard for 18 months and you never hear about him again, like which happens a lot, especially in the early aughts. Like this seems to be potentially a good fit for certain people. So if that does come to pass, I think that could hopefully lead to maybe being an altering of the dogma heading into the next 4-year cycle.
New on-ramps to success. I like that.
But I think you also have the situation where a lot of countries don't have the trials, right? So I think that you have this other version of events where someone's like, okay, our country is going to pick three people. And there's probably some communication there. Like, I have a pretty good idea that I'm going to be one of those three people. So I can, you know, choose my race selection differently. Right. In terms of like, all right, I don't have to worry about like, oh, my spot is on the line if this doesn't work out. Or the opposite of someone being like, I'm on the outside looking in on this selection process. I'm running Houston hard. Again, not an American runner, but like someone who's in a selection process. Like I'm going to go like the Houston Elite Marathon field from an international perspective has some excellent runners. And you've got to imagine some of those people are thinking, hey, if I run really well in Houston, maybe I'm putting myself in a position to get chosen for the Olympics. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that also, you know, from a more international perspective, can also set the stage for people in kind of like the opposite way that the American athletes are approaching it.
Yeah. I think, especially for the half marathon at Houston, it's always been a very fast race. Like last year, I think you needed a 61 or maybe even better to be able to win that race. Like
Connor Mance does that in the middle of a long run, Mike.
I know, but so, like,
I mean, is that really that fast?
It is very fast. And, he ran Houston last year, and he did a really good job. But I think that for a lot of those people that are trying to like curry favor with their national selection committees, putting down a really fast half marathon, like in Houston, or going to Seville and running a fast race there, definitely helps to kind of like, you know, gild the lily a little bit in terms of getting you that invitation, I think. So I think internationally, we'll still see some pretty interesting racing the next couple of months. Although from the American side, after what I think is going to be, for me, the most interesting race of the year, the trials, after that, it's going to be really quiet for the rest of the kind of season, I think, for the Americans.
I think that's it. All right. Let's bring it home. All right. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Relay Podcast. As we teased earlier, we're going to have the drafts coming out before the trials, the men's draft and the women's draft for the U.S. field heading into the trials. And then we're also going to be announcing what we'll be doing trials weekend down in Orlando. Look at Mike's arms going off. He has a live show, so we got to go. Everybody, thank you so much for listening, and happy running.